Who are you?
Who am I? I'm a being of compassion and light who's come into a temporary human body to inspire and uplift all sentient beings.
You're Bhagavan Das? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Bhagavan Das.
And Bhagavan Das, how many other Dasses are there? What are the other Dasses out there? Who are the other Dasses out there?
The Dasses like who you would know of would be Bhagavan Das and Ram Das and Krishna Das would be the most famous Dasses in America. There's many Dasses. There's tens of millions of Dasses.
And Bhagavan Das, you're known as the Jimi Hendrix of chanting. Is this true? How did you get that title? Did you get that title from Jimi Hendrix?
I was managed by Michael Jeffries, who was Jimi Hendrix's manager in 1971. So I had a deep connection with Jimi, and that was the title that was given to me when my first record came out by Rolling Stone and by Mike D of the Beastie Boys.
When did that record come out? It was like 1994?
No, it came out in 2000. Not actually, yeah, it came out in 1999 or 98, somewhere in that vicinity, I believe.
So what does the Jimi Hendrix of chanting chant like, Bhagavan Das? Can you give us a little sample?
just wild and free. Just wild and free.
How about in a little example? Like, you know... So how would that differ from, say, like the Michael Bolton of champing?
Michael Bolton, I don't know who that is.
You know, like a sort of regular rock and roll sort of chanter. Well, Michael Bolton's not regular rock and roll, but how would that differ?
I think it would just be there's a freedom of expression and just being able to just step out into the void.
Bhagavan Das, is it true that at one time you actually sold air?
Air?
You sold air. Did you sell air at one time?
Sunshine, yes, I did. I was a top solar salesman in Hawaii for 6 years.
What exactly did you sell in the solar variety?
I sold solar hot water heating panels for people's houses, cutting their utility bills in half.
What else have you sold over the years, Bhagavan Das?
I was the National Encyclopedia Britannica salesman and the Rookie of the Year. I also was quite adept at selling cars and was in the car market. I was a fire and casualty broker, sold insurance, and pots and pans, and vacuum cleaners, door-to-door.
Now, Bhagavan Das, I first heard about you years ago when I came across this LP right here. This LP is Baba Ram Das, Here We All Are.
Wow.
Now, what is the connection between you and Baba Ram Das? This LP here was recorded in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and it's all about Ram Das. And this is, I guess, Ram Das talking about his experiences in India, and this is recorded in 1969, and you're mentioned on this LP.
Right. Yes. Well, Ram Das left me in 1969 and came back to the West to become Baba Ram Das.
I guess maybe we should give some background. Who was Ram Das?
Ram Das is Dr. Richard Albert, who was the Harvard professor who was instrumental in promoting LSD with Timothy Leary in 66, 67 in those years. Yeah, and also helped the Grateful Dead, along with Osley, who was the main manufacturer of the best acid at that time.
Now, at that time, where were you? Were you in India or were you in California? And how did you meet up with Ram Das?
I was in India. I left for India in 1963, about 2 weeks after the bullet went through JFK's skull. And I ended up in India a year later. And I met my guru in 1965 when I was 19 years old and spent the next 6 years as a naked sadhu, living on the street, muttering Ram and living in cremation grounds and being a hermit.
Ram Dass recorded this LP in Vancouver in 1969, which is really cool, and it mentions his voyage to India and how he encountered you and how you gave away his Land Rover.
Yes, he had a beautiful Land Rover, and I gave it away to my guru. I gave him the keys and told my guru that it was his, which upset Ram Dass very much at that time because it really wasn't Ram Dass's. It was David Padua's Land Rover.
It is quite an amazing record. Was Ram Dass always so vocally talented?
Yes, he always had that talent. And he was just amazingly gifted and tuned in and being able to really talk the room. And, you know, he helped me a lot, too, and showed me how to really, you know, work a crowd and, like, really tune in to the vibration of the room and speak to it.
Because when you put that record on the turntable, the first thing you hear is Ram Dass going, words, words, words. If I could sing a song for you, I would sing a song for you. If I could play an instrument for you, I would play an instrument for you. If I could sing, I would sing for you. However, I can't. My thing is words, and the danger is you might actually listen to them.
Yes. You know, he's very profound. I think this was the most profound time that he had, too, was when he came just back from India.
What's interesting about this, where he mentions you, is how he introduced LSD to some of the gurus in India. That's pretty wild. He actually gave these gurus LSD, and the LSD did nothing.
Yes. He gave my guru three hits of Osley White Lightning, which was about 950 mics. And one hit, which was 305 mics, was enough to completely go absolute ego obliteration. Like you would fall through the floor on one. And I watched him eat three, and no, nothing happened. How could it, since he was already there?
Had LSD been introduced to India at all? Was Ram Dass the first person to introduce LSD to India? Had you experienced LSD in India before? And some people listening to this might be like, bringing LSD to gurus, were, you know, they had no idea what they were going to eat then.
Yes. Well, see, Ram Dass's thing was that he had already spoken to Mayor Baba a few times and asked Mayor Baba about LSD. And he wasn't sure and wanted to know whether it was a really bona fide spiritual experience. So his thing was to go to India with 10,000 hits of LSD and give eight hits to all the holy men, Tibetan Buddhist monks, Southern Buddhist monks of Vipassana orders and sadhus and everybody. And he gave it away to everyone. Yes, he was the first one. This was 1967.
He talks about having some bad trips. What is the worst trip you've had?
I've never had a bad trip.
How about Ram Dass? He's had quite a few bad trips, according to this.
Yes, he has had a lot of bad trips. And it's just, you know, Jerry Garcia had a bad trip and never tripped again. I mean, if you have a bad trip, you got to trip again and go back again and you know, turn it around.
When did you first encounter Jerry Garcia?
I first encountered Jerry Garcia in 1989 at the Grateful Dead in Oakland, California, though I'd known him from the early days, but not personally.
So you were in India, and then you returned to the United States of America. Have you been spotted with any unidentified parasites at all recently?
No. You mean like as inside tummies and things?
Yes, because when you returned from India to the United States of America, weren't there like 30 unidentified parasites in your body?
Yes, there were. There were all these unidentified parasites, and I was given horse poison. And I went off into the woods to die and lied under a tree for 3 days.
What exactly did they find, and how did you get all these parasites, and how long had you been in India in that point?
I'd been in India for 6 years, wandering around like naked and barefoot, and you get ringworms and all kind of different things from the earth, and India's like medieval 9th, 8th century open sewers, and, you know, I was just, you know, living as a complete native and completely, you know, shed my all-American, you know, concepts and mindset. And I got sick just, you know, not eating and eating whatever was given to me in my skull cup.
These unidentified parasites, do you remember any of the names of them?
No, I don't. You know, I went to a specialist in Syracuse, New York, and he was a specialist in parasites and oriental medicine, and he could not identify over 30 of them. 15 he could identify, so he just gave me this horse poison.
Did you invent the hashish milkshake?
No, I did not invent it.
Where have you seen hashish milkshakes?
I have never seen one, actually.
What are the recipes for hashish milkshakes?
I have no idea. think it'd be kind of hard on your stomach. The resin.
I was curious, and you are?
I am what?
Bhagavan
Das.
Bhagavan Das. Allen Ginsberg wrote a poem about you. What can you tell the people about the poem he wrote about you?
He said that I tuned into Mystic Mama on the Montreux telephone, and that if he had nothing better to do, that he'd follow me around the world chanting with me, and that I was his mother.
Where did you meet him, and do you remember any of the lines of the poem?
Not specifically. I gave you the lines I remember, but I met him in New York City in 1971 when I returned from India. And he showed up immediately at my doorstep and was waiting for me. And we struck up an amazing connection and conversations. And we've been basically on the same thing. He was an early mentor of me. I read Howell in coffee shops when I was 15 to 16 years old.
What's your connection to Timothy Leary?
Well, I met Tim many times, and I don't really have a very deep connection with him, but I really liked his psychedelic prayers.
Did you meet him in India at all?
No, we didn't meet in India. I met him when I came back in Santa Cruz, I think during a conference that Albert Hoffman was at, and we hung out together.
How about in his later years? Did you keep in contact with him at all?
No, I never had no contact with him. I just met him occasionally.
Bhagavan Das, you grew up a surfer, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Whereabouts?
I grew up in Laguna Beach, Dana Point, Southern California, and spent all my youth surfing in the ocean as much as I could.
Did you meet the Big Kahuna at all?
I did meet the Big Kahuna. I met the Big Kahuna in the mystical sense of merging with the Pacific Ocean, and I met the Big Kahuna in embracing the wave.
That's great. Somebody finally met the Big Kahuna, the legendary Big Kahuna.
I feel so. You know, it was the wave.
Were you familiar with any of the Sunset Strip scene of the 1960s? Did you ever meet Sky Saxon or hear about his band, The Seeds?
No, I didn't. I had no idea on that.
Or were you in India at that time? Did you leave? You left in 63, right?
Correct. I left in 63.
And then when did you return from India exactly? 71, was it?
71, correct. 1971.
So I guess you missed out on a lot of the psychedelic garage 1960s Americana music then. Or did any of that filter over there?
No, not really. I mean, I heard Big Pink, you know, in Benares in India, and a few things filtered over, but not really. You know, the Beatles album. Some of the Beatles albums did.
Did any bands tour over there? Did any American bands tour over there, or Canadian bands? Or were there any rock gigs over in India that you attended? Or did you play any? And what were you playing at that time?
I was playing guitar in India, and I met Buzz Skaggs in Kathmandu in 1967, and we hung out for about a month together. He's lived with me, and we played. He played me all the new Bob Dylan songs and all the new music that was out, and we hung out for a month and played music together.
Bhagavan Das, do you feel sorry for tomatoes at all?
Do I feel sorry for them? No. Well, I guess, you know, it's hard to find a good tomato, you know? I mean, there are a lot of tomatoes. And, you know, I do feel sorry because you have to hit the tomato just right. In other words, it has to be not too, you know, firm and not too soggy and just, you know, the right texture. But a great tomato is great. And I do. It's difficult to find a good tomato.
Bhagavan Das, what are the misconceptions about gurus that are out there? What are the misconceptions of gurus?
Well, people think gurus are people, and gurus really aren't people. Gurus are gurus, and gurus are beings of light and energy who carry a vibration called what we call the guru tattva. And the guru tattva means that it is something like an umbrella that comes upon you, and you are tuned in to the whole lineage which of all the gurus. And so it means ruing the goo, and the goo is darkness, and ruing is removing. So a guru removes the darkness. People in the West see them as personality cults because we worship famous people. So we think gurus are movie stars, etc., and then we judge them for not being perfect.
Have you ever heard of Yahawa?
Yahawa? No.
That's a sect that Sky Saxon was involved with. It was led by a Father Yod.
Oh, yes, I heard about him.
What do you know about Father Yod?
I don't know much about him. I had some people who were into him, I remember, at one point. In Hawaii, I met them. And they gave me some kind of pamphlet of his. And we did this chanting of the name of God, the Yahiwahi, or Yahawawa, or something. And I did it on the beach with this guy. It was really high.
Apparently, when he died, he was stuffed and mounted.
Wow. That's a shame. I mean, he couldn't even leave, huh?
Have you encountered any stuffed and mounted gurus at all?
Yes, I have. My Tibetan Lama is stuffed and mounted, Kalu Rinpoche. When he left his body, they discovered when everybody talked about it, all the other Lamas did not want him to leave, and they decided he was so holy that they would mount and stuff him, which they did. And he's sitting in a little box right now in his gompa in, you know, northern India, in Darjeeling. So you can actually go and see him. He's all shellacked up and, you know, he's a mummy.
Bhagavan Das, what sort of chanting should go on in a delivery room?
In a delivery room? Ha, 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 ah, the out-breath.
Have you ever done any of that in a delivery room? Because you've had quite a few kids.
Oh, yes, I have. I love births. That's like one of my favorite things to do, is to chant at a birth and to worship the women. Because I worship women and babies and, you know, and so I worship the Divine Mother. And there's nothing more Divine Mother-ish than a birth.
Bhagavan Das, what is placenta soup?
Placenta soup is the most delicious soup you could ever taste. You take the onions and garlic and you chop them up finely. You saute them in some garlic and some olive oil. And then you cut the placenta up in very fine pieces and you throw it in the pot and you sear it really quickly. And then you pour in the water and you make a soup. It's fantastic.
Now, is this something that all new parents should eat? Would you recommend all parents having placenta soup?
Absolutely. I think this is the most important, because you're truly eating the baby.
Yes, what exactly is placenta?
The placenta is the actual tree of all the energy that feeds the baby for 9 months in the womb. It is like this divine tree of life that just feeds in and into the baby.
Now, when you're delivering the babies, I don't know if you deliver them personally, do you?
Yes, I did. I delivered all three children.
Are there doctors around? Is this at a hospital?
Yeah, I was at a hospital the last two, and I was with a midwife. Delivered my first child alone with my wife in Nassau in the Bahamas. We did have a midwife in the corner of the room, but she didn't do anything.
What has been a reaction from traditional doctors to placenta soup? Like when you say, hey, we're going to have some soup a bit later. Want to join in on this? What has their reaction been?
Well, I don't really know what their reaction is. I've never really spoke to them, though I did get really weird looks in the hospital when I left with the placenta in a shoebox. They gave me the placentas in a shoebox, and I know they gave me weird looks. But, you know, the hospitals take the placentas and sell them to cosmetic companies, and they use them to make really expensive face creams for women.
So better you drink it than it ends up on somebody's face.
Yeah, exactly. It costs $350 for a little jar of placenta cream.
What does the soup taste like?
Delicious. It's the most delicious soup. It tastes like liver, like the freshest liver.
And so it's not like clam chowder. You know, sometimes you have clam chowder and it tastes more like tomato than it does clams. Does it actually taste like something?
It tastes like liver. It's just the most intense taste you've ever tasted. It's just beautiful. It's fantastic.
Bhagavan Das, I think you've led quite an exciting life, especially in the 1960s, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
Not to belittle the last couple of decades.
No, it was amazing. I'm so blessed. I hung out with the top gurus and the holy men on the planet, and I was able to spend 6 years, you know, in the holiest places in India before the middle class arrived in India. So it was still like the old India, you know, Mahatma Gandhi style.
How did you know that they were the top gurus? How do you know somebody is a top guru and you're not been taken for a ride?
Well, you can tell. You get your guru meter, like you have this inside kind of Geiger counter. And I was just attuned in, you know. I just knew. You know, you know.
Bhagavan Das, here's a quote from you in the 1960s. Well, not from you, I guess about you, apparently. Bhagavan Das, waking up in the mid-1960s to a 17-year-old Swedish blonde girl on one side of his Nepalese cowshed bed.
Uh-huh.
And a silent young French woman with long black hair on the other.
Yes.
That sounds pretty adventuresome.
That was fantastic.
So this was a silent Swedish blonde girl. How did you communicate with her? Obviously enough to have sex with her.
Oh, I just had lots of sex with both of them. We didn't communicate. I just loved them up. They loved me, and we just didn't do anything but moan and groan.
But she couldn't actually speak? How did you speak to her? Because apparently she was speechless.
Yeah, she was speechless. There was nothing to say. It was all telepathy. I've had many relationships that way. I had a Japanese girlfriend who didn't speak a word of English either. And so we lived together a month.
So take us through that. Like, how do you actually, what do you think when you come up to somebody like that? You don't say any words.
No, you just look them in the eyes and you just like vibe them. You just like mentally talk, you know. You hold hands, you kiss, you touch. You just go into the, you know, into that feeling tone.
So do you remember that night, the silent young French woman and the Swedish blonde girl?
Yes, I remember it very well. It's one of the high points of my life.
So are you able to connect with them right now? Where are they?
I have no idea.
Can a Kirtan performance ever go wrong?
Well, what's wrong? I mean, yes, of course. Things can, you know, the sound system might go out or, you know, it's like you may not be able to get the energy going. You know what I mean? But
what is a typical Kirtan performance? I imagine a lot of chanting. What is involved with that?
Well, you know, a lot of people are doing kirtan now, but kirtan is really a devotional act of surrender to the Divine Mother. And so if you're not connected to the Divine Mother and you're not really connected to the deity of the mantra and you don't have the initiation, it's not going to really go in the same direction that it would with someone who has those, has that ability, excuse me, has that ability.
What's the strangest place you've done a performance in? Like, you've worked the whorehouses of Sri Lanka. That's pretty intense.
Yes, the whorehouses of Sri Lanka was fantastic, yeah. I played Beatle cover songs and slept on the grand piano. That was far out. And people threw beer bottles at me.
What is the biggest thing you've had thrown at you?
Probably just, you know, a large quart-sized bottle of beer. But I guess the strangest place I played was I played a rave in San Francisco with naked girls in cages above me. That was kind of far out. And the whole room was like vibrating.
And how about for location, most sacred place that you've played?
Most sacred place, probably the temples in India, you know, different temples in India.
Have you returned to the temples of India?
No, I haven't. I'm going to be returning soon. I'll be in India this coming next year in January 27.
When is the last time you were there?
The last time I was in India was 1971.
Have you kept up with anybody that's there? Are you going to be able to visit your old guru that's been mummified there, that's been mounted?
Yes, I am going to go visit the one who's stuffed and mounted, and I'll be looking forward to that and hanging out with him.
Bhagavan Das, what do you think about hot yoga? Hot yoga, where people pay a lot of money to do yoga hot.
I think it's pretty silly. And, you know, people like to get hot, you know. And, you know, we worship fire. We're like a fire culture. We like to kill people and blow things up and, you know, zip around on digital reality.
What is your favorite yoga pose, do you think? I noticed on your MySpace. I think it's awesome, Bhagavan Das, that you have MySpace.
You do? You think that's great?
Yeah, myspace.com/Bhagavan Das.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed you have some photos there of you outside pretty much naked.
Uh-huh. I guess so. I don't remember. Yeah.
Is that your favorite pose? Like, because I noticed your leg was strategically placed to cover certain body function elements.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, I think my favorite pose is, of course, being naked. And I guess, you know, sitting up really straight and, you know, bringing my hands up and calling down, you know, the divine Shakti of the mother. And I like the corpse pose a lot, too.
Do you have a favorite breathing technique at all?
My breathing technique is from the solar plexus. And I just like to breathe in, you know, deep from the asshole and just like blow it out the top of the head.
And you're a Bhaga?
Van Das.
Bhagavan Das, what exactly is your relationship with Rick Rubin? Have you ever met Rick Rubin at all?
Yes, I met Rick many times in Los Angeles. And we went to a movie screening together of Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan's last concert and hung out with him. I had dinner at his house. You know, I don't really know him that well.
Has he offered to produce any of your recordings? Because he's always doing all sorts of different types of people.
No, he hasn't offered yet. I haven't approached him. Or he hasn't offered yet. I think he's quite busy.
And how did you meet Mike D?
I met Mike D through Chris Novoselic of Nirvana. We were hanging out. Chris and I are good friends with Sharon Gannon and David Life of Jiva Mukti Yoga. And I was hanging out with them and partying down with Chris. And he said that Mike D was in town. The Beastie Boys were doing a concert. Mike D was crazy about me and was reading my book and really wanted to meet me. So he hooked us up. And Mike D came to my workshops and got a lot out of it. And we had dinner and became good friends and decided that we would do a record together.
How did you meet Chris Novoselic?
I met Chris through David Life and Sharon Gannon. And Chris played with me two or three things. We played two or three concerts together in Seattle.
Was this with his band Sweet 75? What band was he in?
I think he was with Sweet 75, and he just played bass with me in a couple of yoga centers.
So what sort of money is there in chanting Bhagavan Das? Like you were saying, Jimi Hendrix's manager wanted to sign you. Obviously, back in the 60s, money, money, money.
Oh, absolutely. I was ready to really hit it big. You know, I was a huge, big, flashy, high-powered guru when I was 25 years old when I met Michael Jeffries. But unfortunately, Michael Jeffries died in a plane crash in Woodstock about a month after we met. And he was in the process of turning me into a gold record.
What exactly is your discography? How many records have you had out that are on vinyl?
On vinyl, I've got Swaha and I've got Ah. Actually, on vinyl,
When was Ah recorded? That's kind of the seminal. Is that the definitive Bhagavan Das? Is that the first one?
Yes, that's the first one. And Ah was recorded in 1972.
Is that with the track Amazing Grace?
Amazing Grace was the second record called Swaha. I played with Amazing Grace, was my backup band, with Krishna Das and Jayotal.
And what year was that?
That was 1975, 76.
So do you have any new recordings out? What can people buy from you? I guess they can go to Bhagavan Das MySpace, myspace.com, Bhagavan Das.
They can go to bhagavandas.com. And bhagavandas.com, which is my website, carries all my music. And I've got Ah out again. Ah has been re-put into digital CD format. Also, there's the Sunset Kirtan, three record set, which I did in New York City. And the Holy Ghost sessions that I did with Richard Sales here in Vancouver, fantastic blues. And what else do I have? There's other things going on. There's Mount Vision, which is an amazing recording. It's very psychedelic. It will totally take you on a trip just by listening to it for 20 minutes. It will totally leave your body. Everybody does. So you can't drive with it or use machinery or...
Bhagavan Das, coming to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. You were saying you came here years ago first.
Yes, I did. I came here in 72.
And did you perform? And what were you performing at that time? Do you mainly play guitar? What is your main instrument?
It's called an ektara. It's a two-stringed instrument with a gourd and a long bamboo staff.
And what did you do in Vancouver at that time?
I sang. I did concerts. Yeah, I always sing and do concerts.
Bhagavan Das, what's your relationship with Madonna?
Madonna and I sang together for a couple of hours just before she made Ray of Light, and we had a really amazing time together. So she sang with me, and it was really far out.
How did she contact you?
She contacted me through my friend Eddie Stern, who runs a major yoga studio in Manhattan. I'm sort of in the New York scene. You know, and so we're sort of like, you know, everybody knows people and, you know, sort of like that.
So you helped her with her vocal workouts before Ray of Light?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I got her in the right vibe, you know.
And she did really well. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was good. It was good. It was a wonderful connection.
Were you giving her some vocal workouts or some chants? Like, is there a Madonna chant?
No, I was just worshiping her as Kali Ma, and she was just going at it with me for, like, you know, about 2.5 hours.
Have you explored much in New York? Like, there's a museum of Tibetan art in Staten Island. Have you been to that museum at all?
Oh, no. Is that the Rorschach? Rorschach?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I have not been to that one. I heard about it. Yeah. He was quite an unusual person.
So you're always traveling, Bhagavan Das. Where is home for Bhagavan Das? Is it New York?
It's New York City. I've been in New York City for 8 years, so I would say New York City is home.
Bhagavan Das, why are some people afraid of guys with beards?
I don't know. I guess just because they can't see their face, maybe.
How do you calm people that are afraid of guys with beards? Because some people are afraid of guys with beards.
Yeah, I don't do anything. I just, you know, let them be afraid.
Why do you like having a beard?
I don't know. It feels comforting. You know, it's nice. It feels like, you know, it should be there because it grows there.
Do you think it's important because you have quite a stature, Bhagavan Das? Like, you're quite an imposing figure. Does that help you being a guru? Can I call you a guru?
Yes, you can call me a guru. Yeah. I think it helps. Yeah. It helps being big. You know, but there are a lot of short gurus and small ones.
Well, thanks so much, Bhagavan Das. Anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, life is short. Make it sweet.
And Bhagavan Das, why should people care about Bhagavan Das?
Well, Bhagavan Das is a living legend of America, of Americana. And Bhagavan Das is, you know, the surfer. And he met the big kahuna. And, you know, I was the first one out of the gate in India. You see, really the most famous thing about Bhagavan Das is I was the first person to enter Disneyland in 1959 when Disneyland opened. Because I live 20 minutes away from Disneyland, so I stayed up all night at the gate of Disneyland, and I was the first person in line. So I was actually the first person to walk into Disneyland.
Is there photographic evidence of that?
No.
I want to believe it.
It's true.
It is true.
It's true.
You think they would actually have photographic evidence of that? Don't they know the first person to walk in?
I have no idea. I guess, you know, maybe they do.
Have you been back since?
I've been back to Disneyland a few times early on, but I haven't been a long time.
Because in the 60s, they were pretty harsh. They wouldn't let people with beards in. They made people trade in their outfits for, like, Mickey Mouse t-shirts. You know, they didn't want people representing who they really were unless they looked like the ideal Disney image going into Disneyland.
Right. I understand that. No, I didn't go too much after I was 16 when I left America, around 18.
Well, thanks so much, Bhagavan Das. Keep on rocking in the free world and doot doot a loot doo.
Ba ba.